We visited the biggest slum in India.
Play the theme music.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Tripology. I'm Alan and I'm here with the ever conscientious Adam.
Alan, we're still here, mate. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And I'm here in what can only be described as, I hate to say Tripology Studio 4.0, but something's changed, hasn't it? It's very beautiful in here, very aesthetic.
It looks really good. Again, pointing people towards the YouTube channel.
I'm trying to turn this into a visual medium, Adam. We've been on Spotify. We've really conquered that hill and now we're here in visual media. And as if the audience needed another reason to go from Spotify, keep Spotify playing, go to YouTube as well, youtube.com/AtTripologyPodcast. But I'm wearing my new Root and Tootin podcast pants and so are you. We went shopping, didn't we?
We did. We went to a local market, Linking Road.
Yes.
And, you know, if you weren't there, I would have paid over the odds for this pants, for this pair of pants. That I really don't like. They're itchy as anything, mate.
Very itchy in the way of pants, these are. You went to get some pants for yourself. Mm. I said, go on then, if you're getting podcast pants, I'll partake as well. And we've ended up with a very primary colour pantaloons that we've been... I've decided every time I do the podcast from now on, I'm going to be wearing these bright red pants.
Mm. So exactly the same style, but different colours. I like yours more. But I've got to be honest, I hate the fit.
Of mine?
No, of both. Of
oh,
both.
God. I've been a bit concerned about this because I've been eating quite a lot of tali every single day. And now you've told me you don't like the fit of my new podcast pants.
No, because people listening to this podcast will know that fundamentally we're backpackers, we're travellers. So it's only fair that after being in India for a split second, we've got to get some long flowing pants.
Yeah, it's the done thing, isn't it? You'll see backpackers sojourn through a hostel. Oh my God, the barely a piece of fabric touching their body, but all of their body is covered. So voluminous are some of these, you know, you've seen them, the classic Thailand elephant pants, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of fabric.
Exactly. We're about 10 minutes away from getting a piercing and some dreadlocks.
Yeah, exactly. So we went off to get voluminous pantaloons and we've ended up with not quite what we asked for, but they do suit the podcast.
They do. Fair to say they're skinny fit.
Skinny fit little things, aren't they? It's crazy that we're both wearing them. You look like you're wearing tights. I mean, really, please. We'll post videos on Instagram. We'll be on YouTube. We want to turn this into a multimedia thing. We're having ever so much fun. I'm loving having you here now.
Wicked.
Not that I had my doubts. Not that I ever have my doubts, Adam, but it's just been really cool having you here, man, because it makes not only doing the podcast more fun, It's just changing the way I see travel.
Oh, wicked. Yeah, that's amazing to hear. And we should maybe address that we've stayed for quite a long time in the same hostel when initially we thought that I would get here and then we'd book out an Airbnb, we'd have a private space to record, all this kind of stuff. But we're having so much fun in the hostel, aren't we?
I love the hostel because not only is it free breakfast every day.
Mm-hmm. Good one as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have criticized the fit of my jeans and now I'm going to talk only about food. But these are the reasons why I like the hostel. There's free breakfast in the morning. And then because it's Ramadan at the moment and the owners of the hostel are Muslim, they're doing iftar with us. They're breaking fast with us. And so we sort of get a lovely evening meal as well.
Mm.
So provided for am I on a culinary front. I mean, I've had to go and buy new pants.
Some people would argue that if you get two free meals a day, you don't necessarily need to eat the three meals in between those two meals.
You don't, yeah, but somehow they've all seemed necessary. So it is a beautiful place to stay. The community is beautiful. There's a lot of cool people moving through the hostel. So we stayed at the hostel. We can shout it out if you like. You want to shout out the hostel?
I'd love to. Maybe we'd do a separate thing for them as well, but they're called Namaste, Backpackers in Mumbai.
Yeah.
And it's just a lovely communal feel, lots of interesting people, as you've said, the community aspect, lots of creatives, interesting like screenwriters, photographers, videographers, models even.
Yeah, truthfully. And I would go ahead and say I wouldn't stay in Mumbai unless it was a Namaste, Mumbai Backpackers. So there you go.
And we even went on a photo shoot, didn't we? Our first ever photo shoot, Tripology photo shoot with a photographer. How do you think it went?
I liked you in it. I thought you were very handsome.
I thought you looked handsome.
No way.
Yeah.
Look at us go.
Wait until, well, they're going to go on Instagram, aren't they?
Yeah, of course they are, at Tripology Podcast.
So we'll stick those up and we'll let the fans decide. I mean,
yeah,
my money's on you.
Let's not do a poll on that. That's absolutely ridiculous, absurd notion. But here we are. Look, we've plugged the YouTube and the Instagram. That's all been done.
Get that out of the way early.
Backpacking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying it. We've done some cool things this week. We went to some Buddhist caves.
We did, yeah.
We've been hanging around with a lot of cool people.
We have.
And then, I mean, do you want to talk about the Buddhist caves a little bit, briefly?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, let's do it. Because you didn't have your finest afternoon, did you?
Wasn't the finest afternoon for me. I was feeling a little bit unwell when I... And they culminated in, we went out of the city to these caves, and they're these beautiful... They're kind of... they're 1,000 years old, aren't they? 2,000 years old.
They are.
Outside of Mumbai, there's a national park, and we headed out there, and we were with a really cool group of people. We were visiting these... etched out of stone caverns, pictures of Siddhartha Gautama and various sort of bodhisattvas etched into the rock. We were walking all around and I looked to Adam and I said, mate, I really don't feel so good. Can you kind of like hang back with me? I'm a bit funny. I don't like showing people that I'm sick. I don't like making a big meal of things, you know?
And it was the middle of the day. We've been walking around all afternoon in the beating sun. It was physically quite hard work, I would have said.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't necessarily need to be fit to go to this national park and view the caves, but it was quite the journey to get there. And then we were walking around in the sun. I don't think we'd drunk much water, to be honest.
Yeah. And I just knew, though, if I went, oh, I'm feeling sick, people would be like, oh, we can turn back. Or, oh, Alan, you're our favourite thing about these caves. If you're not feeling well, we don't want to see anymore. I didn't want that sort of thing. So I just said quietly to you. And then I was like, Adam, I think I might pass out. Like, I feel really, really unwell.
Yeah, I felt for you.
You were quite sweet, though. You looked after me a little bit. But then I kind of bolstered. We walked on and you said, oh, Alan, come to this little cave. There's like an echo.
Mm. Yeah, it was wicked. There was a really small room. And I had worked out that by going into the cave and then sort of making this tone with my voice, a very deep tone with my voice.
Yeah.
A sort of very low vibration hum.
Give us a blast. Yeah, that sort of thing, right?
That the echo would go on for, I would say, maybe even 30 seconds.
Perfect. So Adam said, mate, come back. Let's do this echo thing.
Mm.
I was in the little cave with you. A couple of other people in there as well. Oh, check this out. I also home. We were all home.
It was just ringing
together
for ages.
And then, I mean, what can only be described as the inevitable, unmistakable feeling of, oh dear, I'm going to be sick, happened to me from deep within my soul. And mid hum, I was like, I had to run out of the cave. And I mean, I was one of the most aggressively violent vomits of my life occurred.
Projectile, fair to say?
Yeah. Down the side of the cave.
I really felt bad for you because you sort of looked round over your shoulder, didn't you? You're like, don't watch me, please. Walk
away. You
said,
do you want to be alone? I went, yes.
Do you want me to rub your back?
Yeah.
No, I'm fine.
Terrible, really, all that. But funnily enough, after that, you know, I felt a little better. So we think it was just sunstroke, or maybe...
Yeah, I don't think you could have eaten something because it was an amazingly quick turnaround, wasn't it?
From feeling really sick, about to pass out, to, oh, I'm better now.
Yeah, you vomited and then you got on with the day and you were much better and more positive and happy. And
or my immune system is so finely tuned after years of travel that it correctly identified a pathogen well in advance of full systemic infection and just said, get this out of you. Get it out. Throw it on the side of the cave, hey? Purge yourself and then feel well again. And that is what happened, and I felt great.
So, yeah, two good things. The humming was pretty cool, and you were sick and felt better, and all round we had a really good day.
And none of the other backpackers knew that I was sick, apart from Adam, which I liked, because if I don't want anyone to know any weaknesses apart from my best friend. That's, you know, the only way to victory. Speaking of the other backpackers, though, we've got to know a fair bunch of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I like them.
They're wicked.
But they've all been going off and doing something that I initially had trepidation about, you know?
Yeah, which was?
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've got an idea.
Yeah.
Spill the beans.
Well, he has an idea because sometimes we discuss what to talk about in the episode and I said, oh, let's talk about this thing. Often the backpackers were going off and coming back to the hostel and saying, today we visited the largest slum in Mumbai.
Yes.
The second largest slum in all of Asia.
Yeah.
We went there and we would have conversations with them about it. It was something that I initially felt quite trepidatious about.
Yeah, and quite rightly so. I mean, it's very normal to be so apprehensive about that sort of thing because it's billed as a tour, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, we did a tour of the slum.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obviously a famous slum in Mumbai, Dadhavi. And I think that we are interested in going, but we never want it to seem like we're sort of tourists just having a look for our own benefit. And it's very conflicting ethically, morally. I don't know whether it's my concern,
right? Is it just seemed voyeuristic in some sense, wasn't it?
Mm.
Like, you can put one spin at it. Oh, it's the slum where Slumdog Millionaire were filmed.
Yes.
Maybe that's intriguing to some people. It has a lot of superlatives, you know, second largest slum. But it is somewhat voyeuristic, I'm sure the listening audience will agree, to be like, oh, we live a life of, let's face it, quite a lot of privilege.
Yeah.
Let's go and view this place, which the very nature of it is that people there don't have very much or are in difficult circumstances.
Yeah, of course.
The definition of a slum is a place where, you know, it's a government-owned piece of land where people have built their houses.
Yeah.
And it's often very densely packed, like much more densely packed than any other areas of the city. It creates problematic economic and social conditions. Just going there to look at that for the sake of it seemed obtuse in some way to both me and Adam.
Yeah, it's very difficult to sort of drill down into the reasons why you want to go and see something like that without falling upon the idea that maybe it's because you're interested in seeing how people live in that way.
Yeah.
It's you know, very, very densely populated. The families there have got no space at all. And for it to be billed as a slum tour, it didn't sit well with us initially without having much more information than that, to be honest.
Exactly. But we met a lot of backpackers who we respected who said, listen, you've got the wrong end of the stick. It's important that you go with an open mind, with a sense of kindness, not with a sense of voyeurism, no, but a sense of empathy, but a yearning to learn, because it's likely that your Western perspective of the slums is entirely wrong and based on erroneous information given to you by Hollywood or in a book that you haven't even read. So you should go to the slum, use this company. They're very ethically minded. They don't let you take pictures. You should go and experience what the actual people in the slum think about their slum, because it ain't what you expect it to be.
All of the backpackers, it was unanimous. They were saying there's a real sense of community there. The people are there that are there are very happy. And, you know, there's sort of infrastructure and it's just absolutely not a negative experience. And the people that we met said that they didn't feel like they were just poking their nose in and looking at impoverished people. It was overall a very, very positive experience. And some people even said that, you know, beforehand they felt the same way we did. I don't know. It really does depend. I'm still, even now, you know, spoiler alert, we went to the slum, and we're going to talk about that in the second half of the episode. But even now, you know, to be completely honest with you, I know that beforehand I was thinking, oh, is this really the right thing to do? I feel like we've picked the best tour company to do it with. Doing it without a tour company actually is not something that I wanted to do, because right, then I feel like it would almost be more voyeuristic
to just go by yourself and
yeah,
not. Yeah, so interestingly, we chose a company which very explicitly donates 80% of their revenue back into the whole economy that makes people's lives in that slum much better. We've actually not spoken about our perspectives of what we think about it. We've come straight from that yeah, tour to here.
Yeah, we did it today.
Exactly, to talk to you guys about. So maybe now's a great time just to take a moment, have a little meditation break. We'll come back, we'll tell you all about about what we experienced, how we experienced it. I'll ask Adam how he felt. He can ask me how I felt if he wants, but there we go. We decided to do something which we initially were trepidatious about, but now our perspectives might have changed. Let's go on a brief meditation break.
Mm.
And like a photon firing across the universe into the retina of an organism standing on a planet looking into the sun, our conscious mind returns back into our brain box. We're here talking to you about our experience on what can only be described as a tour of Mumbai's biggest and Asia's second largest slum.
Yeah, so this is it. This is me and you talking about our own experience and maybe letting people into what to expect if they do the same thing. The first question I'd like to ask is, would you recommend it?
I, despite feeling very strongly that I didn't want to go initially.
Yeah.
Because I think I really held the flag for us as tropologists being like, I think it's wrong, actually, to go and visit the slum.
Yeah.
I now, having been, would recommend going.
In the same way that lots of other backpackers convinced us. And even then, I still had a little doubt in my mind. I thought, yeah, but, you know, even so, it's going to be a little bit strange. It's going to feel immoral walking through the streets and through people's houses and seeing them in their daily lives. But I couldn't agree with you more, mate.
Because I, like, as a traveller, I'd lived in a slum.
Right.
I was teaching computer classes in a slum out of Nairobi.
Okay.
And I would have been annoyed, I think, living in that slum.
Right.
If just backpackers had gone through on a tour, just like looking, taking pictures of my friends who lived in the slum who I was living with.
Yeah.
And then just effed off back to the airport. I would have felt like, what are you doing?
Mm.
Like, I developed a relationship with those people. I loved living there. There was lots of positive things about that area that I just felt like I got such a perspective that I earned through hard work.
Yeah.
It would have felt wrong to me just to flit on through.
Yeah, sure.
But I had a lot of misconceptions, I think, about what this slum, Dharavi in Mumbai, was.
Yeah.
And having those broken through going on this tour, I think, was of real benefit. I've walked away with a new perspective and I'm kind of reconsidering what I think of poverty in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, the slum itself is gigantic,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah,
it's over massive. 400 acres of land.
Mm.
It houses a million people.
A million registered people.
Registered, yeah. They think it could be closer to 2 million.
Mm.
Because there are lots of people that actually come in from neighbouring countryside areas and other states that come and work there. And I don't know whether they're registered, to be honest with you. I don't think they are.
No, they're definitely not, most of the people that come in from the countryside, right?
Yeah.
And they're there to earn some money because the industry in the slum is vast.
It's incredible, yeah. Lots of recycling.
Mm.
We saw amazing machines, didn't we? Machines
yeah,
that
absolutely.
Were specific to workshops that were breaking down plastics.
Built within the slum
to
do the job of crushing the plastics.
And then pottery, textiles. Hides as well. We saw there was this really sort of jarring moment where we walked through that sort of open courtyard and there were goats that were sort of making their way through a mountain of trash.
Mm.
And just opposite, on the other side of the path that we were walking on, there was some men sorting out some goat hide.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, to see those two things in exactly the same shot, it's like, oh God.
It's really crazy.
Yeah.
So much industry. It must be that the people listening or watching this have this perception of a slum as like a very densely populated area where there's a lot of people living with a lot of poverty. But I know, I didn't consider the industry really. The slum itself generates more than $1 billion every year.
Yeah.
Which is like a huge industry. And everyone within the slum is doing different things, right? Like Adam says. So there's a whole economy that goes on. And the people living there are, by all intents and purposes, like proud, a great community where the crime rate's low. People look after each other.
Yeah.
Everyone's banded together. Sure, there's been religious conflicts and social conflicts in the past, but actually like a very tight-knit community of people where people are like sleeping at their workplaces and conditions cannot be great. But I mean, there's a lot to be proud of about the environment that's been created there.
And with the right attitude, it is a very interesting place to walk around, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know what else you've done in terms of, you know, being in slums beforehand, but it's it's got to be the most compact, most densely populated area I've been to. It's 20 times more dense than Mumbai itself.
Which is just insane, because Mumbai itself is a very densely populated city.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I used to live in Hong Kong, and that was very compact. Everything sort of goes upwards, and there's, you know, obviously space comes at a premium. Mm. But in the slum, there are so many nooks and crannies and little alleyways, and there's a lot of darkness that's created because of how dense it is, right?
That's interesting. Yeah, there is. Yeah, it feels
light just doesn't get through because there are so many buildings on top of each other. And walking through those little alleyways and stuff is, it's a real experience. It is amazing to see. And, you know, there are little kids walking past you in school uniforms, waving and saying, hello, sir.
Yeah, there's many schools that exist within the slum, private and government owned.
Yeah. Yeah. So going through the commercial area, which makes up a large part of the slum, and seeing all the people working there. I mean, we were told by our guide that lots of the textiles and, you know, the bags as well, and also the plastics, they're shipped all over the place, around the world.
Absolutely. I mean, likely the people listening to this podcast, if they've bought a shirt from Amazon or like a budget, maybe a knockoff bag or something, a Gucci bag, or there's lots of items that you could have worn that have likely come out of Dharavi. Importantly, nothing that comes out of there will say made in Dharavi.
Yeah, she did mention that actually, that there's still this sort of stigma attached to it, even within Mumbai and within India as well. They try to hide that. Things will often say made in Mumbai, won't they?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to the food that's produced.
Yes.
Three and a half tons.
Wow.
Which is, it's just such an enormous amount of food to come out of a place like that. But when you've got that many people living in, you know, tight sort of quarters, it's a very difficult life, I think, overall. But my goodness, are the people friendly.
So friendly, and really happy that people were walking through on these tours, because, I mean, it must be frustrating living in an environment like that and knowing that the public perception is formed from, I mean, just sort of fictitious material, really.
Yeah.
And therefore, this thing that you're quite proud of,
yeah,
i.e. your community, is kind of, people shy away from it because they think it's somehow dangerous or unclean or anything like this. So seeing people walk through and change those perceptions, I think, was a source of enjoyment for them.
Yeah. And I did make sure to ask the tour guide afterwards, didn't I, whether the people who live in the community, whether they mind tourists walking through. And she said, no, more often than not. I mean, the people are very proud and very happy because they want to change people's perception of where they live.
Absolutely, man. It raises so many interesting travel questions, doesn't it? Because in an instance like that, I think almost the right thing to do is pursue curiosity at all costs when traveling.
Yeah.
And if you can do that in an ethical way, why not do that? Otherwise, you're denying yourself both an experience and an education because of a preconceived idea that you've brought from the West, telling you that it's wrong to do something, even though the people in the place you've gone to have said, no, this is fine, we want this to happen, it helps people in the slum, we donate the profits, people in the slum want you to come. But I'm like, no, because in the West I've learned that it's wrong to be voyeuristic of poverty, so I'm not going to do that because I know better than the people there. And like, no, I don't. If people are telling me to come and I want to come, then I should come, because I might learn something. And I did learn something. I learned that even the whole idea and perception of slum equals something that I didn't know it equals industry and the community and a lot of positive things.
Yeah, I know that hygiene is an issue there, and I mean, we saw that firsthand, didn't we? We saw lots of trash and in neighboring rivers and obviously all over the floor and that kind of thing. But so I think you make such an excellent point. It is about educating yourself and having a much better idea about how these people live.
Mm.
We just had some really special moments when we were walking through. Do you remember when that lady was picking up the huge basket of pottery?
Yeah, she asked you for a hand.
Yeah. So, you know, just to set the scene, we were walking through this alleyway and there was a gentleman and an elderly lady who were picking up this huge basket of freshly made clay pots.
Yeah.
And they were sort of gesturing to me to help them lift it off the floor.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I just assumed that we were going to carry it down the street somewhere.
Yeah,
so, you know, all three of us lifting this really heavy, big basket of pots to maybe a neighboring street. And we as we lifted it, we hauled it up into the air, and then we pushed it even higher. And the elderly lady, bless her,
she got underneath it.
She got underneath it and popped it on her head.
Yeah,
and just said, "No, this is all right." Stuff.
She went, "Oh," went off into the distance.
Off into the distance with this huge thing sort of wobbling around on her head. Bless her.
People are so hardworking there. I mean, we are at risk of glorifying something which obviously conditions are trying there as well. It's not that these people have perfect lives.
No, no, of course not. We know how much, we were told actually how much they earn roughly, weren't we?
Yeah. So if you're starting like kind of the lower skill jobs, talking like crushing the plastic and all this stuff, high labor, lower skill, it's like 400 rupees a day, but you can sleep on site and you get the raw materials for your food provided.
Yeah. Which is equal to what, $4 or $5 a day.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's incredibly low. And then if you're in maybe a job where there's slightly higher risk of things like inhaling
toxic fumes from the plastic, 600 rupees.
Yeah, and these people work incredibly hard.
And they're
six
sending
days
that money home to their families, oftentimes, because they don't have to buy the food and they can sleep on site. All that money is getting sent home so that their families in the countryside can enjoy better lives.
Yeah, it is incredibly difficult for these people. Very, very tough. And, you know, we're not arguing that at all. There is actually some redevelopment that's happening as well, which is interesting to hear that lots of people are pushing back against within the community. Because it doesn't necessarily serve them. I mean, some families that live in certain areas have got maybe larger properties. Maybe they've been there for a few generations and their houses might even be a couple of floors. And then you've got other people, other families that live in much smaller properties. And I guess the idea, the redevelopment idea, I actually read on the internet beforehand that the estimated redevelopment cost of the area is more than $1.6 billion.
Wow.
So it's an enormous undertaking. And even some companies outside of India have bid as well. But there are some families that live in really small properties that maybe will benefit from these huge high-rise apartment blocks because they'll end up getting bigger apartments than what they currently live in. However, there are some families that already live in larger properties that may have to downsize even though their family is, you know, much larger. So it's a tough one, really.
It's a tough one. It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, and oftentimes, like, people form their own communities and senses of ownership and all these things, and government intervention can be seen as a positive thing or a negative thing. And oftentimes, these things have complicated political nuances that, I mean, we're probably not equipped to understand. But I will say, my perspective has definitely altered and shifted. And I think that, I mean, pursue ethical travel. Think for yourself. Make decisions accordingly, you know? There's a lot of things to consider when you're flipping yourself around the world.
Yeah, it took us a few conversations, didn't it? We've got some good friends that were there and they told us it was great at the end of the day. And then we met a few people after that a few days in a row and they all said that it was definitely worth going to see. Some other people did go on tours where they could take photos, which, you know, I think you can just gauge whether you are comfortable with that.
Yeah, I feel complicatedly about that. Like, we didn't take pictures or film anything all day. But then at one point, a little kid came up to you and asked if you wanted to play cricket with him. And you, like, bowled a few balls. And we filmed that because it was, like, a beautiful community thing.
Yeah, and even the tour guide asked if they could film it.
Yeah.
Seen it as well. So, you know, we thought that that gave us license to film something. And it was such a beautiful moment, wasn't it?
It was great.
Just for anyone who wants to know, the kid bowled me out on the first ball.
Good at cricket, wasn't he, that kid?
It was incredible. Amazing. I couldn't believe it.
But our tour guide was amazing. Let's talk a little bit about her, because she was so sweet. She was so wonderful. She was so knowledgeable. She was, you know, she grew up in Hyderabad and then came to Mumbai, did a marketing tourism degree, and she was just very, very knowledgeable and sweet. I made a bit of a faux pas because we talked to her all the day about how, you know, important religion was to her. And she was a wonderful Muslim lady who made it quite clear that she was on Ramadan and fasting. And then upon being offered a sugary drink at the end of the day, I said, you have my one. I'm not going to drink one. And she was like, no, I can't. It's Ramadan.
I told you this 10 minutes ago, but thanks anyway.
There you go. You win some, you lose some.
It was coming from a place of love, though.
It was coming from a place of love, but also from a place of a man who's been taking iftar with other Muslims every single day for the last 2 weeks and should have known better.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't beat yourself up about it.
I am beating myself up about it, and more on that in the Patreon section of the podcast.
Interesting, the split. They said the religions within the community, within the slum, tend to be about 60-65% Hindu, 30% Muslim.
Yeah.
And then the rest is made up of various other religions. Really interesting.
Really, very interesting. Is there any other facts you want to give the audience about the slums? I think we've done a good comprehensive how-to coming to Mumbai. Visit the slums if you want, if you have a sense of genuine curiosity. Otherwise, I mean, just try and get in a Bollywood movie and live a sort of a different existence. Do what you like, basically. But if you're curious about multiple things, maybe you can do both. Maybe you can see one side of Mumbai, see the other side of Mumbai, see how some people live, see how other people live, as long as all the time you're listening to Tripology Podcast.
Yeah, I like the idea of a Bollywood movie. Who knows what the future holds, Alan?
Who knows what the future holds, but there's polarity in everything. The light and the dark, the bright. We'll see you on the next week of Tripology Podcast.
We'll see you there. Bye-bye. Bye.